Next case is 07210, State XL General Motors Corporation versus the Industrial Commission of Ohio. Ms. Porter.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. This case is about two issues. I will take about 7 minutes to discuss the first issue. Counsel for Mr. Stefan will take approximately 6 minutes to deal with the second issue and then reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The first, declaratory judgment and not mandamus is the appropriate vehicle here to request the legal interpretation of an arguably ambiguous statute. The second issue that Mr. Menzak will deal with is that the self-insured employer, not the disabled worker, should shoulder the burden of accounting for taxable insurance benefits versus non-taxable workers' compensation benefits. For a writ of mandamus to issue requires three things. First, you must be asking to enforce a clear duty. Secondly, the person asking for the writ must have a clear right to the act or the exercise of that duty. And third, there must be no adequate remedy at law. This court's case law on the clear duty prong of the mandamus requirements shows that a clear duty must be the performance of some act by the state actor or the government actor, or to challenge the agency's abuse of discretion. For instance, in the Ohio Academy of Nursing Homes case that came out just in the last year. Here, there really is not an act that GM is asking the Industrial Commission to perform. The Industrial Commission already performed an act. They issued an order dealing with the set-off that that GM can get when it awarded, Mr. Stefan was awarded TT benefits.
Before we get too far into it, just in terms of the mechanics here, in terms of the tax code, as I understand, GM withheld what would be the taxes on the S&A
Correct.
Payment, and then paid those to the government for the
Correct.
Taxing authorities that requires them. Is it possible under the tax law for GM to file an amended filings or returns and retrieve those funds, or once they're paid, are they essentially gone and beyond the control of GM to get back?
It's my understanding that GM can file one of two things. They can file a declaring an overpayment on a quarterly basis. So if they paid more tax than they were supposed to in one quarter, in the next quarter's tax statement, they can declare that they overpaid and they'll get a credit for that. Or they can also file an amended report of withholdings. In other words, they withheld too much. They can file an amended report and get it back that way. In contrast, Mr. Stefan is going to have a very difficult time, or a much more difficult time than a large corporation like GM, in getting back tax monies. And there's some tax monies he won't be able to get back. I believe he's not able to get back his payroll tax, Medicaid, Social Security, and so forth.
GM argues that it's required by IRS regulations or law to pay the withholding tax. What's your response?
And that may be
That's
true.
That's why they changed their practice.
Right,
their
and argument. That may be true. But again, they have the accounting ability to get that back. And with thousands of employees, they're withholding tax for a lot of people. So if they overpay for one person, getting that back by filing a quarterly report of excess withholdings or so forth.
That sounds like a policy argument, though. Isn't this a legal issue for us to decide?
It is a legal issue. I was attempting to answer your question. They are required from what I understand, or at least from what they say, they are required to turn that withheld money over to the IRS. But what they're not required to do, Your Honor, is to put people like Mr. Stefan on an SNA benefits in the first place. He made a workers' comp claim. They turned him down. And as a self-insured employer, it is their right up front to, it's their right and responsibility to determine whether or not a person, the injury is work-related or not.
They argue that, as I read in the brief, that actually the claimant benefits, the employee benefits from their SNA benefits because the claimant receives those benefits sooner than he or she would receive the benefits from the Bureau. Is that correct?
That may be true if you're talking about a few weeks, but I think if you look at the Bureau statistics, you'll see that it's very few weeks before a workers' compensation claim is usually decided one way or another. But here's where they don't benefit, and that is the SNA benefits are usually much less than TT benefits, which is what Mr. Stefan was asking for here.
Because even taking the tax issue out, there's
still
less.
Even taking the tax issue out, usually the insurance benefits are less than TT. TT is calculated to try and give someone an after-tax income that they can live on for a fairly long term while they're healing. You don't go on TT unless you're going to have a period of recuperation from your work-related injury. TT is calculated to give you an after-tax income so you can pay the rent, you can pay the groceries, you don't have to give up your home or declare bankruptcy while you're recovering. SNA benefits aren't calculated to do that. They're just health insurance.
Is GM required as a self-insured employer to offer S&M benefits?
I don't know the answer to that, but my guess is they probably are.
By who? By statute? Is there a statute?
I don't know. I really don't know the answer.
Isn't that pretty crucial if they're making a voluntary payment to help a worker between get over the hump while their claim is being determined? That seems to be a pretty crucial factor in any obligation they have to withhold tax or not. In other words, if they're doing a voluntary act to help out the employer and they choose to comply with federal law and wage withholding, and you're saying they can't do that, they have to pay the whole amount on a voluntary act, where is the legal requirement that they have to do this?
The legal requirement that they have to give the SNA benefits or that they have to
pay
the tax?
If you tell me you stand there and don't know if there is a legal obligation to carry insurance to cover that gap, then how do we find a legal obligation on the tax issue if it's not even one on the underlying insurance?
I don't think it matters, Your Honor, whether or not there's a legal obligation. And we're not saying that SNA benefits are a bad thing or that GM or any other employer shouldn't be paying SNA benefits to fill the gap. The question here is, what do you do with that tax amount that was not paid to the employee once it is determined that, in fact, he should have been on workers' compensation? That's the question. And the real issue here is who is going to shoulder the burden of having to deal with that accounting problem. The employee who's living, in many cases, paycheck to paycheck while he's on TT may not even have to file a tax return on TT because it's non-taxable.
Well, I think
is then going to have to try and figure out this complicated tax system
to
get this money back.
Maybe hit it on the head. If it's a question of who should shoulder the burden, but there's no legal obligation to pay at all, where do we find in the law basis to support your opinion? Should that be maybe a policy decision by the legislature? If they don't have to give insurance benefits at all, how can we then force them to pay the tax to the employee instead of the government or seek that? I mean, I don't understand if you don't even have any duty to do the underlying action, how do you take to the second step?
Your Honor, I think the reason that they pay the benefits, whether they're required to by law or not, is because they do get this offset later. If it does turn out to be the person was an injured worker, rather than paying a lump sum of TT, which would be greater, they have already paid an amount that gets the set off. And so I think there's an incentive there, whether they're required legally or not, to pay those SNA benefits. If I can get back to the... I'm sorry?
You can use your time as you want, but you wanted to give Mr.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Minzak some time, and you're... Thank you, Ms. Porter. Mr. Minzak, you have 5 minutes and about 5.5 minutes remaining.
If I could, I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. Good morning, Your Honors, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Steve Minzak. I do represent Mr. Steffen in this case, and we'd like to first thank you for taking this matter and agreeing to hear it. Now, to answer some of the questions that were already asked, and I think that will get to the heart of this, in reference to Justice Cupp's question, prior to the change in their accounting practice, exactly what GM did. They paid SNA benefits. There was a Form 941C. They withheld the taxes. They put that back into play with the IRS and got the monies back.
I understood they, from the briefs, that they put the taxes into escrow, didn't actually pay it to the political subdivision.
Right, but they had it separate. They had the money in escrow account for that, and then when they did that, they filed the proper forms with the IRS and were able to take that money back out of the escrow account. That had been their procedure for years. Just recently, in this case, they chose to change those practices, and when they did, that's when all this comes up. Now, when he received, talking about receiving SNA benefits sooner, well, they can. GM's a self-insured employer in this. They can pay temporary total benefits just as quickly. What happened in this case, the case was filed in October of 98. The decision we're here on wasn't issued until March of 2000. So, and in March of 2000, when the commission says, here's what you pay, it was $570-some was the rate. He ended up doing without, if you look at the taxes withheld, a little bit over $70 a week in monies that he was entitled to. Now, at that point in time, could he file an amended tax report? Sure, he could have. Would he have gotten all the money back? Nobody knows. Is he sophisticated enough to know how to do that? Is he going to have to do an amended return? Is he within the time? If he's waiting on the decision, the final decision, as this court would have it now, we're 7 years post this injury.
Do you know the answer to whether GM is obligated to file or give them SNA?
Well, they may not be obligated to give them SNA, as it's a contractual obligation, and I don't know, I didn't see the contracts, I would say it was a contractual obligation, but they are obligated to pay temporary total under 4123.56. That is a legal obligation. That obligation was pronounced by the Industrial Commission, and they had to pay it. Instead, they chose to pay a portion of that instead of paying it to him. Our whole argument is, again, first, the three-part argument. One is whether this was a correct remedy. Naturally, we were a little bit soft on that because of positions we had taken previously in this. Most recent decision issued December or April of 2006, where this court says no declaratory judgment was a correct remedy. Mandamus was not. If that's the case, this court is bound to follow their own decisions on that. If it is, then the next two issues that come about are whether or not GM withheld the proper amount, or whether GM paid the temporary total. And then under 95, if you have some ambiguity, which we don't feel any exists, you still have to find that you're going to err on the side of the claimant. Here, there was no, you didn't need to err. They had a policy in place. It was working. It had worked for a number of years. They were able to take the money, put it in escrow, use that. Now, here's Mr. Steffen saying, for how long, at least a year and a half in this case, at the initial outset until the first determination, you now do with less than you're supposed to for your weekly amount, and then chase that money back. What happens is he has to be able to file that, get that money back. If he was shorted, then go back and ask GM for that money, hopefully within the two-year parameters under 52. Otherwise, he's precluded from that. It's an extra burden that was not supposed to be placed on him and was.
This is a mandamus action, as you know, and I guess I'm having trouble fitting your request for a remedy here into our law on mandamus. I mean, where is the legal requirement, statutory legal requirement or case requirement that says that the GM must do what you say it must do? It sounds to me like as Ms. Porter said, it's an argument over who shares, who shoulders the responsibility to get the taxes back. That I don't find that in the statute any place. Would help me.
And remember, Your Honor, this is not our request for mandamus. This was originated by GM. It's theirs.
Right.
Their request saying we don't agree with the Industrial Commission's order. The Industrial Commission's order was to pay this very specifically. I think it's page 75 of the record that says you pay this amount per week for a total of this amount. They're saying, well, we kind of paid it. We didn't pay it to him, which it specifically talks about. They paid it into some ethereal account. Based on that, I don't think there's any question. Now, again, whether it's a mandamus action, I think Ms. Porter covered that, and that may well be the case that there should have been a declaratory judgment. That's not our part of the argument. Our part of the argument is it should not have been a mandamus. GM is alleging mandamus was the correct remedy.
But Revised Code 412356 doesn't address who should have to make the claim for any withholding of these payments from the government. Isn't it a legislative problem?
Well, it does, except the legislature actually addressed that in the actual statute because they said unless it's approved by the Industrial Commission, the Bureau, or the claimant, then the offsets were not to be made. There's no offer of proof that anybody approved this. So the legislature did take time to think this out and say if these offsets are going to be made, and they're going to be made, here's how they're to be made. Nobody agreed to those. It's specific that they weren't there, so I don't think they can make them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Minzak. Mr. Sinnott.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the appellants just made a number of misrepresentations of law and fact, and I want to cover those during the course of my presentation. But first, I want to review the substance of this case. It's a simple one. The facts of the matter are that General Motors created, on its own initiative, not under mandate of law, a private disability benefits plan. That plan has
required
the effect
by a collective bargaining agreement. Is that part of a collective bargaining agreement? Do you know?
Or Justice the reflect? There is no record that comes before the court on that subject. My belief is that this disability plan has been in existence for decades. I do not believe it is mandated by a collective bargaining agreement, but the record does not speak to that subject.
Thank you.
One of the effects of the private disability plan created by General Motors, through collective bargaining or not, is that this plan provides benefits to employees making workers' compensation claims, provides benefits to them before the correctness of the claim is adjudicated. In this particular instance, these private disability benefits were paid for almost 17 weeks before there was a determination made that Mr. Steffen had a valid workers' compensation claim.
If the Bureau finds it is not a valid claim, is that insurance recouped or is that still a benefit for the employee?
Justice Stratton, in the ordinary case, it would not be recouped because if the claim is denied, that means the source of disability is non-occupational. And the plan provides benefits for that reason. These are classically called non-occupational sickness and accident programs. What happened here is that General Motors paid this private disability benefit for almost 17 weeks. It is clear under federal tax law that these private disability benefits are subject to tax withholding. That is to say that the employer providing the program must send to the federal government to hold in trust for the benefit of the employee a portion of the private disability benefit. When the commission determined—
Stop you there. Yes. The federal government holds that money in trust for the employee?
That's exactly what happens when, for all of us, when there's a withholding made from our paycheck and that money goes to federal government. The federal government is holding that money in trust for the benefit.
It's not a different status than anyone else's, any other withholding taxes paid.
Chief Justice Moyer, of course not. We heard a great deal during Pellin's presentation about this onerous burden that would rest with the employee of enjoying benefit of this money being held in trust for him. Well, in about 3 months, we're going to be bombarded by a bunch of television ads encouraging people to take their tax refund and go to my shop and use your tax refund there. It is a common part of the American experience for there to be an over-withholding of income taxes. And then on an annual basis, the federal government and the American people settle up. And if there has been an over-withholding, then the employee, the worker, the American, gets the benefit, either by a tax refund or a credit as to future tax that's owed. This is hardly an extraordinary or onerous burden. This is a common part of American life.
Is there a, excuse me, is there a 1099 or some other informational piece of paper that comes to the employee where this has occurred that they can take to their tax preparer, and it would show clearly a withholding took place that was not to have taken place? Or
Justice Pfeiffer, yeah. Of course, there is an accounting that every employer makes to its employees of wages paid, sick benefits paid, and income tax withheld from those payments. That, too, is a common feature of American life, and we would find it in this case.
But these benefits, when paid, were taxable and then later converted to non-taxable. Is that right?
Justice Pfeiffer, no, there's no conversion that takes place here. There's no conversion that's possible. The fact of the matter is that workers' compensation payments, state workers' compensation payments, are non-taxable.
Right.
There is a withholding requirement that is imposed by federal law. It's the reason why General Motors does it this way. There's a tax withholding requirement that applies to private disability benefits.
Now, I understand, but wouldn't the 1099 show, hey, you got X number of dollars of wages, and then you got X number of dollars of these taxable sick and accident benefits?
Justice Pfeiffer, I believe it would be a W-2, yeah, because of the employer-employee status.
And that would reflect that it was taxable at the time it was paid to the employer.
At the time that the disability benefit is paid, it is subject to tax withholding. It's mandatory.
Right.
And then when the taxpayer does that settling up with the government on an annual basis, the taxpayer would say, this was withheld, but that income stream actually was non-taxable, therefore there's been an over-collection, I'm entitled to the benefit. That's the correct outcome.
Yeah, I understand how it would all work out, but I'm wondering if the paperwork is actually that clean. In other words, it takes a bit of sophistication on the part of the tax preparer. Let's assume that this person goes to H&R Block or somebody to have this done to reflect that this item that shows on the W-2 as what would ordinarily be a taxable benefit ends up not being taxable.
Well, Justice Pfeiffer, I don't think there's anything that's all metaphysical about this calculation. It's really one of the most fundamental ones that's performed in the payment of individual income tax. You take a look at what is your taxable income, and then you take a look at how much tax has been withheld, and you're either plus or minus. You get a refund, or you have to pay a little bit more on an annual basis.
Mr. Sinnott, before the accounting procedures changed, as I understand it, General Motors did not send the withholding to the taxing authorities until it actually was determined whether it was a work-related injury or not, and whether the individual was capable of obtaining workers' comp, which would be non-taxable. What motivated or what was the reason for the change in the procedure to what it is now?
Justice Lansinger, because historical disability programs operated by General Motors, as those that don't apply to Mr. Stephan or this case, because they're not at issue here, there is very little in the record about the old disability plans that General Motors may have operated in the past. It is true that the current practice of General Motors is mandated by federal income tax law. There's no discretion that General Motors is exercising here.
So there was a change in statute that required the change in procedure?
Justice Lansinger, there's nothing in the record, and I have no personal knowledge as to why there was a change, if in fact there was a change over the course of time in the way that the disability plan was administered in this regard. What I do know And what is in record in this case is that General Motors' current practice, the one that was involved in Mr. Steffen's matter, it was employed because federal tax law requires it. Now, what is at the heart of this case, though, is an Ohio statute, a statute that says that the employer's liability for temporary total compensation is to be offset by what was paid or payable under a private disability insurance plan. The General Assembly could have elected any reasonable scheme for the set-off. The General Assembly could have said there will be a 50% set-off. The General Assembly could have said there will be a set-off of amounts carried directly to the employee, setting aside that amount which had to be sent to the federal government to be held in trust. That's not what the General Assembly chose as the policy of the state of Ohio.
And then is that the origin of the mandamus action that you filed initially in this case for an enforcement of the provisions of 412356?
Your Honor, we need, in order to secure relief, a writ of mandamus telling the Industrial Commission to vacate the order that it put on and enter another order that enforces the term of the statute.
My question is really going back to what the Chief said. I'm trying to find what the clear duty is on the part of the Commission. You're saying it originates from 412356 because the statute says it gets a set-off for the monies that are paid or payable. And so GM is seeking the commission to offset the tax payments that it sent to the federal government as against the full obligation to compensate the worker.
The commission's clear legal duty is to enforce the statute as written. Much of our workers' compensation law in this state, virtually all of the common law of workers' compensation, comes to us by way of mandamus decision having to do with the determination of how much compensation is to be paid in a claim. The suggestion that this court has been wrong for decades and decades in deciding these mandamus cases on the subject of how much compensation is to be paid in the claim is a radical and completely errant doctrine. This court has had it right through the decades. This is a proper mandamus action. General Motors does not secure full relief simply through a declaration that it has a particular right. We need a court to tell the commission to vacate its current erroneous order, one that misapplies the statute, and enter a new proper order that applies the statute according to its terms.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I had one of my questions was why declaratory judgment. You've argued, obviously, in your brief that it's not adequate relief. But if a court were to say that essentially your interpretation of the law is correct, doesn't it follow that the Bureau then follows that statement of law, or you don't think they would? You don't think it would?
Well, we would need some coercive action on the part of a court to get the Industrial Commission to vacate its existing order and enter a new one. That's what happens in these mandamus cases in the workers' compensation realm all the time. I would hope that the Commission would observe a declaratory judgment in favor of General Motors, but absent a court saying, don't do that, do this, General Motors doesn't have its relief. That's why mandamus is the appropriate remedy in this instance, and mandamus is the appropriate remedy in all of these dozens, hundreds, maybe they number now into the thousands of cases that this court considers where there's a question about how to compute the compensation that should be paid in a claim. Your Honors, in closing, there is an analogy that really lays bare the truth of this case. Let's say that there is a contract of employment entered into between employer and employee. The employer says, In exchange for your good and faithful service, I will pay you $5,000 a month. The first month passes, good and faithful service is rendered. At the conclusion of that month, the employer sends $4,000 directly to the employee and $1,000 to the federal tax authorities to hold in trust for the benefit of that employee. Can the employee sue the employer for breach of contract, saying you paid me only $4,000, not $5,000? We all know the answer to that question. And it's abundantly clear that General Motors paid the full amount for which it is now seeking offset. The Court of Appeals below is entirely correct in its unanimous decision. It should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Senate. Ms. Porter, you've used your time, or Mr. Benzak, but you may take 30 seconds. One of you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Workers' comp benefits are not taxable benefits. This isn't a simple preparation of tax. Mr. Stephan had his injury in 1998. He had to file his taxes by April 15th of 1999. He didn't even have a decision in this until March 31st, 2000. He had to file an amended tax return to get these money back. Who shoulders the burden of paying for that? It's not an unsophisticated task. He's got to do that. Finally, what Mr. Sen is talking about is asking the commission not to do something would be prohibitory injunction with declaratory judgment, not mandamus. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.